Blog Talk Radio.
This is Black Writer Space. I am your host, Miss Mocha. And tonight, our guest is Mr. Omar Tyree. I am so excited to have him on the show. I'm so glad that he took the time out of his busy schedule to chat with us tonight. And I'm going to bring him right on. Hello.
Hey, I'm right here.
Okay, then.
You got me.
Thank you so much for coming on the show and chatting with us. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, you got a lot of questions, so I'm looking at these questions like, wow, boy, she's really going after the jugular here.
Oh, no, I'm not going to ask all those questions. That's just a little, just to give you an idea what to expect. No, I don't ask all of those. But I've been looking at your bio. Man, you're not playing. Wow,
oh,
I didn't even know.
I'm an old man, you know that, right?
Oh, my God. No.
Yeah,
I'm not
20-something.
No.
I guess some folks still think
well,
I'm
you still look like it. You still look like it, so.
Yeah, that's good genes.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Am I
wow.
coming across real good on the line?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, you're good. Let's just start with my first question, what inspired you to write your first book? Like, were you naturally a writer?
No.
Or, okay.
I don't think there's such thing as being naturally a writer. You're going to have to work at, you know, your craft and perfecting it, you know. And the college years, that's when I was working on the craft and, you know, making it do what it do. So I don't know about that whole natural writer thing. I wanted to be an athlete.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
okay. So writing
was
not a passion for you. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. I found out that I was good at writing at the college level. I went to the University of Pittsburgh wanting to play for the Pitt Panthers in football. I ran track when I was there and found out that I had a pretty good skill at writing and communicating. And so I said, well, if I'm already good at this, let me go ahead and keep doing it. And so I started writing my first book at age 19 at the University of Pittsburgh. And it wasn't Fly Girl for a lot of people that keep thinking that. My first book was called Colored on White Campus. The second book was Fly Girl.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So now the first book is now called College Boy and my Urban Griot series. And that's my other tag name, writing name, you know. So a lot of folks didn't get in trouble for me writing masculine and, you know, more educational content that, you know, sometimes women like to read. They have romance and relationship stuff. And if you're writing something else, you can get in trouble sometimes with the money people. So you had to try and figure out a way of doing both. And that's where I came up with the whole Urban Griot concept.
Okay. Cool. You definitely have it together. Let's talk about the... how did you come up with all your titles? You have quite a few books. So how does that work with when you complete a manuscript, or do you come up with your title first? Is it something that you just wait and see what you get, or how does that work? Is it just taken from the story, from the concept of what the story is about?
Yeah, that's a good question you're asking. I wrote poetry, too. I've written over 600 poems. And you have some poets who write without a title. I'm not that poet. So I always start with a title, an idea. I don't just see what happens. I always look at people and say, if you're trying to see what happens, how do you know where you're going? You know, so with my stuff, I always have a beginning, a middle, and an ending. And then it's just about working out the rest of the, you know, organized details of what I want to say in that particular story. But it always starts with a subject. If I want to write about AIDS, I'm going to come up with a storyline that fits AIDS. If I want to write about Africa, I'm going to come up with a storyline that fits Africa. If I want to write about the moon, I'm going to come up with a storyline that fits the moon. So it's always going to start off with a title and a subject, and then I'll build the characters and the story around that. And that's why I've been able to write so many different types of stories, because I'm always interested in different subjects and not allowing the characters to control me, but I'm controlling pretty much what characters I want to write about based on what subject I want to write about. You know, so I'm not one of those writers that just, you know, throw a dart on the wall and figure he's going to do something, you know, that totally has no organization to it. I always start with organization.
Okay. I was looking at the programs that you offer for publishing for authors that want to, I guess, work on getting a book deal from their book. You had a lot of good programs on here. I was really impressed.
Yeah, it's more than just getting a book deal. It's also about self-publishing, and it's also
right.
about, you know, just tightening up your writing period. But as a professional, you definitely want to make sure that individuals know it's a professional service. You know, sometimes, folks, can you hook me up? Can you hook? Nah, this is a professional service. There's no hookups
right.
here. This is business.
Right. The Publishing 101, and then the master's degree program, and then the PhD program, and then the go-to-market program.
Well, the Publishing 101 is free. You know, that's why it's 101. It's just the basics. You know, so I give that to people to let them know that it's a lot more complicated than what you think. And then once they can get past that, if they still need a lot of help and they won't get it on their own and you want to hire me, and, you know, there's a fee involved. So once you move past the Publishing 101 and into the master's degree, then you start dealing with fees. And then each one that goes up higher is going to be a higher fee, you know, because you're asking me to do more.
Mm-hmm. And really,
yep.
the master's degree, that's still a good, that's
yeah.
really not a bad price.
Not at
if
all.
If you ask me. No,
but
that's not a bad price.
You'd be surprised. A lot of folks can't pay $250. Now, when I was writing my first books in the 90s, I was paying $500 just for editing, let alone my graphic
right.
designer, you know, let alone my print runs and everything. So these folks are trying to put books out, and I'm thinking, what do you think you're going to put books out with? You just going to chop down a tree and put together your
right.
own paper? Everything
right.
costs. You know,
right.
you can't have persons hired for nothing doing your editing and up all night with your book and your words. And so a lot of these individuals, I look at them as broke artists. When I was first trying to put my book out, I looked at it as business. I knew I couldn't come to anybody without having a dollar fee. I would ask them immediately, how much would it cost for you to do this? You know,
right.
so I got to re-educate everybody. This isn't the free game here. This is business. If you try to put a book out that you can sell, then understand that every service you have provided for that book is going to be business.
That's right. That's right. And they don't. I don't think they even think about that aspect. I have a lot of inboxes from Facebook asking about getting on the show and different things. So I've come up with a little sponsorship fee, and it's pennies. It's pennies. But I got an email yesterday saying I was told not to pay for any interviews. Well, your book just came out. It's not like your Omar Tyree. You know what I'm saying? Where you've already proven yourself, you've already sold this many books, and no, nobody knows about your book. So you know what? That's fine. It's your decision. If you think that just by your book being on Amazon or you posted it on a couple of groups on Facebook that everybody's going to flood and buy your book, go right ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they look over that aspect of, okay, now you've done the book, now it's complete, now you have it in your hand, now what you going to do with it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Anyhow, yeah, I experience that all the time. So tell me this, how much of, what percentage of your books are normally realistic, or are they from your own life experiences? Is it a mixture of fiction, nonfiction?
Well, you know, as a journalist, I've told people all the time that there's really – no such thing as fiction. You know, if you create something based on humans, chances are it happened to somebody. So even if I make it up, unless I make up something that's totally, you know, if you're writing paranormal stuff that you don't want to believe, or you're writing, you know, science fiction stuff that you don't want to, even if you're writing science fiction, you're basing it on science, you know what I mean? And that's no fiction when you're basing stuff on science, you know what I mean? Even the whole, you know, spacecrafts and flying around in space, we actually have stuff that can do that now. It just costs a whole lot of money to do it. You know, so when you look at those Star Trek movies and stuff like that, they're talking about hundreds of years in the future. Hundreds of years in the future, we won't be able to fly around like that. You know, so I look at all that stuff. There's no real things. It's such called fiction where you're creating something that can't happen. If your mind can conceive it, that's the reality. You know, otherwise, people can't believe it when they read it. You know, even with this whole, you know, witchcraft and floating around on brooms, you imagine that stuff, so it becomes a part of your imagination. So with all the stuff that I write, I don't even write about, you know, brooms like Harry Potter and magic tricks and stuff like that. I'm writing about straight African-American humans. And so, yeah, it may not be based on one individual person, but it's all real. And otherwise, you know, black people, we typically don't read a whole lot of make-believe stuff. That's just not what we're into.
Right.
So it may not, I may not sit you down and say, give me your story, but if I tell a story close enough to yours, you say, yeah, that's my story. It's not exact, but it's not exact to anybody unless you're telling an exact person's story, but you still get the point that these are the things that happen to humans.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense, and you're definitely right. We don't.
Well, you know, I'm gonna tell you something else. You know, when people talk about, you know, the whole nonfiction thing where they're writing so-called real stories, the reality is, and I'm working on a ghostwritten project right now as I'm speaking to you. The reality is, if you sit down and do an autobiography with a person, do you know how much information they will tell you not to put in that book? And so when you put the book out, that ain't the reality. That's how much they allowed you to tell about their life. So at the end of the day, is that a lie or is that the truth? Yeah, oh, don't put that part in there. Oh, don't talk about him. Oh, I don't even want to talk about that. Oh, well, we're not going to go in there. Oh, well, my lawyer told me not to talk about that. Oh, well, my mother would flip out if I said that. And so in reality, if I write a book about an unknown person, I can be more honest than you're going to be in your autobiography, because you're going to take out so many things that you don't want to damage your career or damage your family and all that kind of stuff. But if I make up a name, I can put all the truth in there, because it don't hurt nobody. So reality is, the fiction is more fact than a whole lot of the so-called nonfiction stuff.
Yeah. Wow, I never looked at it like that, but you got a point.
Yeah.
You definitely have a point.
Yeah, for a long time, they called anything black fiction because they didn't believe that black people had any truth to tell in their stories. You know, Roots is fiction, you know. That's classified as fiction. Roots, you know.
Wow.
So I realized that. And then all those white books that left black people out of them, you know, those are factual books. One no such thing as black people. And, you know, that's crazy. Where we come from then? You know, and so a whole lot of times when you're dealing with these so-called nonfiction books, all it is somebody's idea of the story that they wanted to tell. They ain't necessarily all true. Yeah.
Wow. Definitely something to think about. I have one more question, and then we have a caller that wants to come on.
Well, you got a caller?
Yeah.
I never get callers. They'd be scared to death of me.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they'd be scared to death.
I have a caller. Yeah, we get some every once in a while. A lot of times people, you're right, they don't want to call in.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but they don't, yeah. But what I want to know is, what author have you been influenced by, if there are any?
Yeah, I don't really talk about influence writers for the most part, but I'll name my top five, you know, if I can do that.
Okay.
Richard Wright is number one. He's the godfather of all African-American writing, and he took the work seriously, you know, with Native Son and Black Boy and The Outsiders and so much content that Richard Wright put out in the Harlem Renaissance era that really put the black voice on point And his stuff was serious. It wasn't no step and fetch and stuff in his books. He was like, look here, black people have a voice, and this is what this voice needs to say, and we are serious people to take our lives seriously. And so I really, you know, look at him as that number one dude. Number two is a cat by the name of Chester Himes, and he wrote a whole bunch of Harlem detective stories, and, you know, he left the country and went over to France and wrote a bunch of stories over there. A bunch of stuff that was just real honest and factual and embarrassing. But he had the courage to be that honest about who we are as a people and what he wanted to write. So I look at Chester Himes as number two. Number three is a street writer by the name of Iceberg Slim. Now, a lot of people like to read Donald Goins, but Donald Goins actually came after Iceberg, and he was influenced by Iceberg and inspired by Iceberg, but a lot of people don't get into Iceberg's work because it's a lot more complicated. If you read an Iceberg Slim book and then read a Donald Goins book, the Iceberg Slim books are way more complicated, and a lot of times people, they don't like to think as much when they read, so they like the easier flow of Donald Goins, where the complicated psychology and intelligence of Iceberg Slim was a little too much for a lot of people. But I go with the master, and the master is Iceberg. Okay, then I go with number four. Toni Morrison is another individual where a whole lot of new readers can't understand her. I don't know what she's talking about, but I had to read her in college, and I understood everything she was doing. That's a high level of writing, you know. And so Toni Morrison said, look, if you don't understand me, then you need to read some more books and come up to my level because I'm not coming down to yours. And I agree with her on that. Everything shouldn't be so easy. You got to think sometimes. And her books are excellent. I'm not saying that, you know, she got to keep writing about slavery days all the time, but her books are still excellent in the intellectual psychology and culture that she presents about who we are as a people and what we had to go through in this country. And then my number five is the guy who's still standing and still writing political work right now, a cat by the name of Walter Mosley. And he has written the most books for all contemporary writers, and he has written a whole lot of different types of books and a whole lot of contemporary books as well as political books about, you know, black people and mystery and intelligence and the whole nine. And so he's one of the hottest cats from this new era. I think he started writing somewhere, or publishing, rather, in the late 1980s. And so he's the hottest cat that's still here with us. And then you have Octavia Butler, who is no longer here, and she wrote black science fiction and black fantasy and really put us on the map on that level. And she wrote my favorite book, a book by the name of Wild Seed, that I would love to see as a movie with, what's the brother's name, Wesley Snipes and Angela Bassett. I would love to see them in that Wild Seed movie for the people that's listening. It's called Wild Seed from Octavia Butler, my favorite all-time movie. So those are the people that I really look to as people that not really influence me, but definitely I love reading their work and what they do. I don't really look at anyone having an influence over me. I just look at the craft and how I want to write each particular book and pretty much freestyle based on what I know about the craft of writing and what I want to do with each individual story. And so I'm my own man in that way.
Okay, well said. Definitely well said. I'm going to bring the caller on. Hello?
Okay.
Hello?
Hi, do you have a comment or question for our guest tonight?
Yeah, how you doing, Omar? First of all, I just want to say congratulations on your newest book, Corrupted.
Oh, thanks, partner.
Yeah. My name is Brian. I'm also from the Charlotte area here. Also, congratulations on making it to the top 100 there. I got a few questions for you. At what age did you first start writing books?
The first book I wrote at the University of Pittsburgh, I was 19. The book was called Colored on White Campus. I was a student athlete who really was disengaged by the whole scholar versus athlete question, where a whole lot of athletes are getting scholarships, but they're not really studying classes. A lot of times they don't graduate. They don't really learn anything outside of their sport. So I really got political at that time and wrote my first book, Colored on White Campus, and I became real radical, pretty much like Spike Lee's, School Days, and then the Ice Cube character on Higher Learning from John Singleton's movie. I became that radical black man. And so instead of just running my mouth, I started writing them down in stories and putting it all together. And so that was the first book at 19, Colored on White Campus, because that's how I was feeling at the University of Pittsburgh, and so much information had dropped into my lap that I wanted to speak about.
Wow, that's good. And you gave
mm-hmm.
some good answers. also, at what point did you become completely, I should say, dependent off of your books? Like, did you have a day job for a few years and then your books took off and then you just strictly became a book author, or have you always had a little side hustle?
Yeah, and what's that? October the 6th, 1992, I got my first copies of Colored on White Campus, and that was a hard sell. It was an academic book. It was very didactic, where it was very noticeable that I was trying to teach people about racism and, you know, all the white and black issues, and it didn't have a great cover design on it. And so I was a rookie. I put out a yellow cover with Etch-a-Sketch kind of graphic design. It wasn't great cover at all, so I had to force a lot of sales on that, and a lot of people bought that strictly because I was a 22-year-old dude pushing books and hustling in a positive way. So a lot of people bought it who were just looking at me and saying, wow, this is positive what you're doing. But the second book, Fly Girl, that I put out in April 1993, I started doing a whole bunch of what they call Black Expo events, so sister expos or cultural expos, where you set up a little table and they got thousands of people there to really see musicians, but in the meantime, they walk past your table and might buy something. And I was a really aggressive salesperson at age 23, 24, selling this Fly Girl book, and that one really took off. And so, what's that? October to April. Once I hit April and hit May and June, I sold so many copies of Fly Girl that I went ahead and went into business for myself. Before that, I was writing for the Black Press in Washington, D.C., and then after that, I just started doing freelance writing for the Black Press, and I was 100% publishing books from that point on. So that from 1993 on, I've been self-employed in the book industry.
Wow, that's good.
Wow.
Tiffany, I don't know about you, but you know what? I can hear the passion in his voice, and you know what? You could probably sell a book to just about anybody. You can probably sell a book to an illiterate person if you really wanted to.
Nah, that didn't work, man. When you get around men, one of the things I found out, and that's why Fly Girl took off, it was a book that the main character was a woman. And fortunately, I didn't know at the time, but I was just writing about, you know, the type of sisters that I was highly attracted to as a teenager, and you couldn't afford them because they wanted you to take them on shopping sprees and stuff, you know. So I said, well, since I can't afford these babes, I'm going to write a book about them. And it just so happened that me writing a book about a woman, the young women got involved, and they buy books and like reading. Had I written a boy book, like the Colored on White Campus is based on a boy, it didn't sell well. My third book, Capital City, I wrote about the whole drug dealing trade in Washington, D.C., when they called it the murder capital. That book didn't sell well as Fly Girl either, because then it was masculine, it was more hardcore, you know what I mean? The women didn't get into it as much because it had all the men in it and the hard language and all that kind of stuff. And so the female book really took off. So I couldn't sell books to men. They're just not interested. A lot of times they'll tell you to their face, I don't read books like that. I buy this for my girlfriend. You should put it on tape or put it in the movie. And they tell you that in your face. You know, so nah, you can't sell books to everybody, man. I was just fortunate that I had one book that took off with women, and that Fly Girl to this day made my career, no matter how qualified of a writer I think I am, and no matter how many great books I think I've written, Fly Girl really created the economic impact for my career because girls got into it and they loved it, and they've been reading that book now for 30 years.
Wow.
That's good. That's very good. And you are right about the men. Unfortunately, I would say about 80% of the women over the men that you decide to run into will read a book. Most men won't. And I realized that I had to change my gimmick because I actually forced myself to go to men, especially when there's couples out there. I don't want to disrespect anybody. So when I see a couple out there, I go to the man first because I don't want him thinking, you know, that I'm trying to talk to his woman or whatever, you know, and I'll mention my book. I'll give him my business card and everything, you know, and I'll be like, hey, look, if you don't read, then, hey, maybe you might want to buy this autographed book for your woman, you know what I mean? Hey, they like the sentimental gift, and you don't get no more personal than that. So I had to change up my gimmick a little bit, but I did run into a few men that did read, or they're like, you know what, I appreciate your honest hustle, and I'm going to buy your book just to support. So I have had a few of them, but I have been forcing myself more so to go to men, and I've been forcing myself to actually go to Caucasians, not just black women, but go to Caucasians as well. And you know what? And I don't try to be a used car salesman of books either. I don't tell them what they want to hear. You know, I tell them the truth, you know. And, you know, I've been really pushing myself to, you know, see if I can sell to just about anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But you are right about the men. Most of them don't want to read and don't want nothing to do with the book.
Well, that's good that you got, you know, your mojo ready to sell anybody, because that's how you have to be. You got the economic hustle down pat.
Yeah, yeah. It, you know, hey, I got to strive. And, hey, I got you to look up to. There's a few other people that I look up to, you know, as far as out there that's writing books and everything. And I also like to, you know, talk about a lot of the unknown authors out there, because at one time, every great author started off as an unknown author. So do you have any words of advice for all the unknown authors out there that's trying to make it?
Well, keep writing and keep hustling. You know, if nobody knows who you are, you got to make sure they know who you are. I think, what's her name? What's the big mouth sister out of New York that's always doing the radio stuff, dropping dimes on everybody? Wendy Williams. Wendy Williams once called me.
Yeah.
She called me the king of self-promotion because I was always pushing and pushing. And I'm really an introvert, but when it's time to sell a book, hey, man, I ain't got time to be quiet and silent and shy. You know, I got to let you know that I did something, you know what I mean, that you need to jump up on. So, you know, for all the people that want to be book writers, you got to get out of that shy state unless you're going to hire somebody else to be your hype man, because unless that book has such dramatic material in it where it's going to sell itself, and some people are doing that. They put these dramatic covers on it. They put the dramatic content on every page, and then the content sells itself. But for the most part, you have to be able to get out there and hustle and grind and talk to people to sell your work, just like you're saying. And the reality is a lot of the men who do buy books are individuals who write as well. You know, like you buying books, you're a writer. Me buying books, I'm a writer. So I find that a lot of men who are into, you know, buying some of our work, a lot of them are writers and artists as well, so they understand what we're going through, and they're always looking for new knowledge themselves. So that's just the reality of the situation, where you get more women that just love to read, period.
Right, right. And I tell you what, I believe you. You are a man of your words. You do hustle and you do promote, because I'm actually one of your Twitter followers. And I tell you what, man, I probably get 50 to 100 tweets with your name on it a day. So, hey, one tweet in a way.
That's good.
Keep tweeting. And I understand the concept of it as well, because you know what? When people look at their tweets, you don't know what's on their mind at that moment. You don't know if they've seen that tweet. You don't know, maybe one of their friends might be looking at it. But it takes a lot of tweets for somebody to finally come around and be like, oh, you know what, you're right, you know, I'm going to go ahead and read that book. Or maybe they meant to get it and they forgot something else came up. So the way you flood your tweets out there, you'll still hit them later on down the road. And, hey, that's why you're in the top 100 right now.
So, yeah.
Hey, doing what you do.
Thanks, partner.
Well, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Okay, I have another caller.
Sure.
That wants to come on. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. You have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, I do. Hi, Tyrese. I have a question for you. I noticed that You established your own publishing company at a young age, and that is phenomenal. But I understand how you say that you got to push and self-promote. But sometimes there's a writer in all of us, and sometimes people just don't know where to start. Do you have any writer's workshops that are trying to – I know that you are an advocate for getting literacy handled, but do you have workshops that are available for aspiring writers as well?
I have one-on-one consultations that you can go to. And we talked about that earlier in the show. Go to OmarTyree.com or email me at Omar8Tyree@AOL.com. And I have consultations. Publishing 101 is a free tidbits that I give you on the industry and writing. And then you have the master's degree program where you get one-on-one consultations for the rest of your life. And then you have a PhD program where I get you an agent and get you publishing contacts. And then you have a ghostwriting program where that's a lot more expensive. So what if you had a full guy if you want me to write your book with you? That's totally different because you ask me to do a whole lot more work. But I do start off with the basic consultation where I tell you all the ins and outs of the publishing industry. And you can get that through my website or email me directly at omar8tyree@aol.com.
Okay, well, thank you. That is so helpful. One more question. What are your thoughts when it comes to electronic books versus traditional books?
Well, electronic books right now with the new what's happening, you can get paid every month by it. You can put out whatever you want. There's nobody in front of you, no gatekeeper system, no touring that you have to do. But, of course, the traditional method, you get the tour, you get to see the physical book, you get advances from publishers, and it's just the typical state where you have people right there in front of you who are buying books, getting them signed, and you feel that completeness. Versus the e-book, you may not feel the completeness, even though you have something that people are reading, because it's all, you know, online and whatnot. So it's not that physicality of you shipping books and boxing books and signing books and selling books right to people where you're collecting money right in front of them. You know, the internet thing and the e-book thing is all about e-book money coming in where, you know, it just comes right into your account, but it's set up where you can make money every month. And where the traditional books, you may get an advance, and then after that you'll get royalties unless you put out your own book where you can sell your own traditional book, softback or hardback, and do the regular book signings and events that I used to do when I first started. So it's just two different fields, but, you know, one, you got to do a lot more work and you need a lot more validation, a lot more money. That's the traditional route. And the e-book route, you don't need as much money, you don't need the validation, but you don't have the physical content that so many people are used to having that validates that I actually written the book and I have it on my bookshelf and here it is and you can pass it to people. So it's just two formats, but, you know, at the end of the day, if you want to make money and you want to get your word out there, you can use either one.
I see. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Tyree. It was good talking to you, and I'm so honored to have had this conversation with you. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Wow, and you say you never get callers. Well, they show calling in tonight. I got one more caller.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Keith. I actually just purchased his master's program.
Okay. Okay, Nia. Cool. Congratulations.
Based on the conversation here, so I'm
oh,
excited
wow.
about that. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
So I just, I'm writing a middle grade book. There seems to be like a lack of books for that age, and there are two. There are actually two black women that are writing, but they're writing for white children. So I decided to kind of fill that gap, and I'm writing one for I mean, it's multicultural, but the main character is African-American, and the other character is Latino. So I wanted to kind of fill that gap, and I'm really excited about having the opportunity to actually discuss that with you.
Right. I have a book called 12 Brown Boys that I put out with a company called Just Best Books out of New Jersey. And then it was picked up by Scholastic Books, which, of course, they're the juggernaut of children's books. And it's
right.
for the same middle readers class between, 9 years old and 12 years old, I think like
yep.
third grade and fifth grade. And when I first tried to publish children's books, you know, every publisher I sat down with, they were trying to push me into that marketplace because I actually wanted to write younger books, you know what I mean, for the beginning readers because I wanted to start African-Americans off at the youngest ages. And when you're talking about middle readers, at that point they're already reading, they should be reading, but they're competing with television, they're competing with video games, they're competing with outside. So I wanted to get kids before they even start competing with that stuff when they're infants, when they're really, you know, 3 and 4 years old, when they're first learning the language, you know. But a lot of the publishers, yeah, they push you to that middle reader thing because the school systems can buy the books instead of the parents. And so what I figured out is that the publishing industry is so terrified of African-American parents not having an interest and buying books, that they push you to the middle readers and then try to sell your books to the school system, thinking that they're going to have a much higher number of school systems that will buy bulks of books versus trying to sell books to parents who they feel are more interested in buying music, video games, shopping, and eating. And trust me, I had to go up against that same situation, and it is very hard to sell books to African-American parents. I hate to say it, but it's the truth. You know, and so that book, 12 Brown Boys, is out in 7th, Momar Tyree. I called myself Mr. Creative for children's books. But, yeah, you're going to have a real tough time, but it needs to happen, so keep doing it. But get ready for a battle.
Okay, well, I did not know. I didn't, you know, I've done a lot of research, but I didn't hear that, and I guess I wouldn't hear that unless I talked to somebody, you know, that's been through it, someone that's of the same persuasion. Thank you.
Thank you
for that. So I look forward to talking to you.
Hey,
I'll send you an
you.
Email.
Yep.
Okay.
You got it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. I'm excited. Great. I'm glad somebody took advantage of that because, like I had just said, that's a really great price to have one-on-one advice with you and find out which direction they need to go with their book project. And, yeah, that's awesome. A lot of writers at your level would probably not even offer something like that, or it would be very, very, very extremely expensive to even have any type of contact with you concerning advice for a publishing your book. But I'm going to take a break, real quick break, and I'll be right back.
All right.
It seems like just the other day that we hooked up.
I was driving, you was walking, and I swooped you up.
From that moment on, I knew
I was single, you were lonely, and we fell in love.
We would sit and talk for hours about anything.
Maybe you hang up, no, you hang up, on three hang up.
I bought you with my picture, and I gave you everything.
Said you'd always be my baby, then you found.
How you gonna
love me?
Back. This is Black Writer Space. I am your host, Miss Mocha, and tonight our guest is Omar Tyree, and we have had an amazing conversation concerning his experience as a writer, all his accomplishments, and just for the most part, the advice that he has for up-and-coming writers who are thinking about or who are already out there or thinking about publishing their book. It's just really, really, really great, great advice. I'm sitting here taking notes myself. So we're just going to jump back into the conversation. Now, I have another I think we have another caller. I'm not sure if this is someone that we had on, and they may have hung up. Let me just double check.
Are you on with me? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me? It's Omar.
Okay, this you. I got
yeah,
you.
Yeah, when you had your little break, I had to call on back because my phone, the charger was heading low.
So okay, so you on a different area code?
Yeah, I'm just on a different number, cell phone.
Okay, got you.
Yeah. I need to call back again?
No, we good.
We good.
I just thought you were another caller. I'm going to go forward with the just a few more questions I have. How much traveling do you do with your books, book signings and tours, and how much are you moving around?
How much am I saying again?
How much traveling do you do with your book?
Traveling?
Yeah. Book
well,
signing.
You know, when you have a new book out that's really selling, you know, you can travel as much as you want to, but for the most part, I travel more with speaking events. You know, you have paid for speaking events that I've been doing for a number of years where, you know, once you become an expert in your field and you talk about a lot of different subjects, which I've been doing for years, you know, my degree is in journalism. So I'm constantly hip on current events and affairs and politics and African-American culture and, you know, literature and a whole bunch of other topics that I jump into, you know, as a journalistic writer. And so I've been speaking at a lot of different events, and that's where I travel even more so than, you know, just the book tours. The book tours, you may do 14 cities. But I've spoken at like 50 colleges and universities, high schools and whatnot, organizations, and that's all around the country. But, however, since about 2009, when the economy, you know, hit a real stiff point, a lot of the colleges, you know, they kind of cut back on their budgets for a lot of programs. And so I do probably half of what I used to do before 2009. And so even with this month here, this is Black History Month, typically I would do 10 colleges in Black History Month of February alone, 10 colleges. But now I'm down to about three or four different events in Black History Month. I have one event tomorrow. I'm going to be at the University of Penn State at Harrisburg campus. You know, and now I have, I think I have a Florida A&M event coming up in March. But typically I would have 10 college events just in February. And so it's really come down with the economy. But you can travel as much as you want to travel, depending on, you know, if you can set up book events across the country, you know, but with a tour set up by the publisher. Right now, with the economy as it is, we're not getting as much tours as we used to when the times were hot in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
So the economy can change a whole lot of that.
Wow. Okay. I'm really impressed with the Urban Literacy Project.
Right.
You have so much information on your website. I mean, you know, I look at a lot of websites during the day, and it's like, It looks small, but you have some really, really great information on here concerning literacy. What are the five key components of literacy? I don't think people really know this stuff or even think about this, the process of communication. I mean, this is good stuff. Like, wow.
Right.
So I definitely want to commend you on that. The existing reading and writing curriculum, this is good stuff. So, I will definitely be going back myself. I'm taking notes now because you have some great. Every time I have an author of your level on my show, I take notes with all my guests, but it's always something when you hear it from the horse's mouth, you know, from somebody who's been out there, because I have a lot of stuff I say, well, I want to do this, I want to do that. So it always kind of puts me back like, you need to do this, this, and this. You need to research this. You need to take a look at this and think about this. So it was definitely a lot of great information and advice, great advice for new authors.
Yes.
So I definitely want to just give you kudos, really. I mean, you got a lot. You got it going on. Best-selling author, journalist, reporter, poet, screenwriter, songwriter. You write songs, too? playwright, event host, lecturer, blogger, publishing consultant, and literacy advocate. Who has won 2001 NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Literature and Fiction. 2006, I mean, I could go on and on, but this is really amazing. And
like I said, I'm an old man. I've been out here for a minute, so I'm no longer in my 20s, and if you're still busy, then those accolades built up. So a lot of times when I do events, I tell them to read a short bio and not, you know what I mean, 20 years of stuff. You know what I mean?
Unless you haven't
done anything, 20 years of stuff can really add up when, you know, you're trying to introduce somebody. You know what I mean? So I try to tell people, look, just read off a couple of things and I can get started.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to read my whole bio, because if you're going to read all the way back to my college years, you know, I've been busy.
Right. You have, and that's a good thing. It's a great thing. That's a great thing.
Yeah,
we need more of
read,
that
you know,
in
like,
society.
You know, Quincy Jones is 75, and imagine somebody trying to read all the albums and records he didn't produce. You know what I mean? So you probably just say, oh, he's a producer. He probably named like three or four. But that man has been producing albums for like 50 years.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't read no bio of Quincy. No bio would be long enough. You know, so he'd probably say, look, just say it's Quincy Jones, the international producer. Let me go on out and do my, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, Quincy Jones, are you kidding me? Quincy Jones has been producing forever. You know, so that's I'm not saying I'm Quincy Jones, but yeah, you get the point where 20 years is a lot of years of steady content.
Yes, absolutely. And successfully. Because we can get out here and attempt to do some things and not always be a success at it, but definitely you've proven yourself and great job. Great job. And that's one thing to have even the opportunity to do what you love to do. So that's a great thing. Just one more thing. What advice would you have for other writers?
What would you want to say to your readers? Yeah, you got to market and promote, you know, more than anything. Understand your craft. You know, I had one person that was under our program with consultation, and she actually told me that she wanted to write a book. She had finished the book. We were trying to get her an agent, and we were editing her content and trying to tell her a lot of great things that she needed to listen to as far as putting books together, and she kept trying to make the comment, well, maybe my book is just different from everyone else's book. And she's talking to me in person. I've read hundreds of books and published it for years. I know exactly what you need to do with putting the book together. And, you know, it all came out, Tiffany. The woman finally said, you know, I don't really like reading a lot of books. I don't read a lot of books. And I said, you got to be kidding me. You want to be a published author and you don't even read books. Yeah, that's crazy. You know, that's like saying you're going to be a radio host and you don't listen to radio. That makes no sense at all.
Right,
you want to be a movie star and you don't watch movies. You know, I mean, that's like you want to be a musician, but you don't listen to music. I'm thinking, how are you going to want to be a book writer and don't read books? It just don't make sense. You have to know what you're doing, the trade, and how you make that trade work by studying what other people are doing and mastering it and then getting your own style based off of what you know already. You can't just start from scratch and you don't know what you're doing, and then you're going to tell a qualified author that's been in the trade for 20 years that, oh, well, maybe my book is just totally different from everyone else's. I said, boy, you got to be kidding me. Yeah, so if you say something again to the writers, you got to love reading and writing, period. I read every day. Now, I don't read books every day. I read newspapers every day, which is my trade, magazines every day, and then I get to the occasional book when I get to it. But I'm constantly reading and watching for style and grammar and, you know, and flow and voice, all the things that become a style of the craft and the writing, you know, a person's voice tone and, you know what I mean, how they put the sentence together. You have to be studying that if you want to be a writer, you know, and the only way you're going to study that is by reading other people and what they're doing with the language.
That's right. That is definitely right. What, for you, what would be the most challenging thing when it comes to writing? With everything that you've done, what would be one of your challenges, if any?
Well, now that I'm at like the end of the career instead of the beginning of the middle, I would say trying to write for audiences would be the hardest thing. I think when I first started writing, you're fresh and new, so anything you give the audience is fresh and new. But after I've written 20 books now,
it gets really hard to keep trying to figure out what does the audience want, what have I not written yet, what do I want to write, what do I'm excited, you know, what am I excited about, what is the audience going to be excited about with me, and it just gets harder and harder and harder with each book, unless, you know, you tap into giving the audience exactly what they want, and hopefully they want what you want to offer them, because sometimes you can end up fighting yourself wanting to write a book that you want to write versus wanting to write a book that the audience wants to read. And that's where a lot of African-American content has now become, you know, even urban content, erotic content, or Christian fiction, because those are the audiences who have, you know, stood the test of time. And all the other types of writing has kind of fell to the wayside because now it's about the dollars, and if you can't validate the dollars from any other type of writing, then the black erotica, the black street lit, and the black Christian fiction are the only three that are still there. Outside of what they're doing now, they're trying to do a lot of celebrity books. The celebrity tell-all books is the new what's happening, particularly after, you know, Steve Harvey put out his Think Like a Woman, or Think Like a Woman, Act Like a Man, or Act Like a Woman, Think Like a Man, whatever it is. And he put out that book to 2 million copies in hardback, and now every publisher is trying to find the next gold of celebrity author, which they're really not authors, but they put books out and they can get a lot of publicity and sell those books. And so that's just the new trend going on right now. You know, for the most part, you got to figure out a way to survive it. And so, yeah, when you get to a point where you've written X amount of books, it's really hard to keep trying to invent new content that everybody's going to go crazy for, that you go crazy for, too.
Wow. Great, great, great advice. Again, I thank you so much for even coming on, taking the time out of your busy schedule tonight. Great advice. I got 3 pages of notes here so I can go back for my own, because I'm working on my own book about my life. So, yeah. It's been sitting for about 10 years, so It's time.
Well, we hope your life is extra dramatic if you're putting it out for the black audience. that's what they like. Well, it was, and that's the thing. It's the numbers game. It's about the numbers game now. So if you're putting out a book where you're not as much concerned about the numbers and you're putting it out for yourself, then you can get away with that and be happy that you put a book out and somebody's reading it. But in the publishing game, which has always been the case, if those numbers don't validate a big publishing house putting that book out, they are not touching it right now. And that's just the deal. You know, it's a new economy, and nobody can afford to put out content that's not going to sell. And so it's become real hard now to get published contracts on work that we used to be able to publish 10 years ago. Now it's just hard to put out because the numbers game says that, look here, we're wasting our money and time putting this book out if it's not going to do the numbers that we need to pay our bills at this publishing house.
So then would you say that would be a writer that would need to self-publish?
Oh, yeah. A whole lot of us have to self-publish. And, in fact, you know, the reality is a lot of self-publishing authors have made it hard for the contract authors, because now if you go to a bookstore and you got 30 self-published authors right next to an established author, and the established author has a hardback book for $25, but you can get 3 brand new books and a package, 3 for $25, and you don't have any loyalty to the traditional old school writer that's with a publishing contract, and you say, hell, let me go ahead and get these 3 books for $25 that I'm buying a hardback, one hardback for $25. And so what's happened now, like a whole lot of self published authors have been taking dollars away from the established authors. And then that makes a lot of publishers say, well, we can't put out established authors like we used to. And so now it's cut a whole lot of contracts that we used to have in the 90s. And, you know, people say, oh, it's enough room for all of us. No, that's not real economy. In the real economy, you can't have 12 grocery stores on one block. Somebody's not going to make money. That's just the reality, you know. In fact, everybody on that block is going to end up losing money, because you're going to have some people that's loyal to one grocery store and people that's not loyal to the other, and then you're going to have to say, what grocery store is selling the thing I want? Which grocery store is giving the best discount? And then it just gets crazy. And that's why a lot of stores fight with each other for space. You know what I mean? As they say, location, location, location. They fighting over a customer base and dollars. And so we're doing the same thing in the bookstores.
a lot of people won't be as honest about it like I am, but that's what's happening. The reality is a whole lot of self-published books have gotten in the way of making real dollars and cents, you know, and somebody has to say it, but that's the reality. So I don't stop the hustle. I let everybody hustle and do that thing, but that is the reality. If you end up sitting next to 20 people selling books, you will not make as much money as you would if you were sitting next to 3 people selling books.
Okay. Wow. Great information from Mr. Omar Tyree. We definitely support your now your book that just came out is Corrupted.
Corrupted. How is that doing? E-book, and that's actually about the publishing industry, and I talk about all the numbers games in that vehicle because you have editors. Watch this now. That book's about editors and publishers and authors, and you have editors who they have to keep their job. Now, watch how this works, Tiffany. If you have all these self-published authors and you got an editor who signs up a new Jack writer who he thinks is hot, and he gives that author $100,000 as an advance, but now with that $100,000, you got to sell at least 20,000-30,000 books for them to recoup that money back. Now he puts that book out, and your author is competing against 75 self-published authors. And so instead of him selling 20-something thousand books, he sells about 12,000 books. So now you got 8,000 remaining books, and he can't move those books. So now you got to, as they said, with the remainers, you end up selling those books for $5, $6. That's how you go to the bookstore, you see the price slash there. Now there's no way the right guy can make his money back. Now the publisher's looking at the editor and saying, I thought you told me this guy was the big cheese and we didn't give him $100,000. Now editors are losing jobs, baby, and that's the way it works. So a lot of black editors over the last 5 years have lost their jobs at the publishing houses because they just can't compete. And the publisher says, look, the black trade is not making the money that we used to make. We can't sign these people. And so now the editors who are left over are scared to death. And if they sign you, they got to know that that book is going to fly. So now instead of signing regular authors, they want to sign somebody from a reality show. They want to sign a musician. They want to sign a movie star because they know that they can get publicity.
Wow.
And that's what you're doing with. And that's the reality. So you hear it from a horse's mouth. I know exactly what's going on. You got editors who are scared to death of signing anybody because they know if I sign the wrong person and the numbers don't fly, I'm going to lose my job. And that's what I'm writing about in Corrupted. You know, new people coming in, old people being pushed out the door, and editors fighting to survive for their lives, particularly black editors, because white folks are still selling a whole lot of books and making a whole lot of money, including e-books, because they simply have more people than we have who read.
Mm-hmm. And they have people making millions off these e-book things. Me, personally, I do like the traditional book in my hand, but then again, it's so convenient to just click a button and have the book right in front of you. So,
yeah,
like you say, it's two different formats.
Gadgets. You still have to pay for those gadgets to do that.
Well, you know what? No. I have it comes right on my laptop with the Kindle app.
Yeah. That's the app that I was promoting as well. You're right. I promote those apps as well on my Twitter all day long to make sure that people that don't have, you know, the facilities can get it anyway.
Yeah.
Yep. So Corrupted is 25 chapters, 700 total pages of hardcore insider information on the publishing trade, and I don't pull no punches in that joker. It's harder than harder than hard.
Okay.
All the real back fighting that goes on when you're doing them daggone publishing deal, and how folks can be pushed out the door too if they're not selling numbers. You know.
Wow. Great information. I didn't even know that part of the game, but you learn something new every day.
Yep.
So I thank you so much for coming on. I look forward to having you back. I will definitely be supporting your up-and-coming projects and anything that you have going on. We definitely support you 100%, and you enjoy the rest of your evening. I will be purchasing Corrupted. All right, thank you so much. Okay, and I will continue to advertise your different packages that you offer for the authors. That's
you got
awesome.
It. OmarTaliu.com.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. All right, now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. Omar Tyree, great guest. So much information about the publishing game that personally I didn't even know. And it's one thing to have someone who has been there, done that numerous times, so you learn from experiencing publishing and self-publishing and being under a major publisher. And like he said, you gotta, if they give you an advance check, $100,000, you have to be able to sell so many books to back up the money that was already paid to you. And then if you can't, the editors, they losing their jobs. So it's like, wow, it's something. Great information. If you missed it, feel free to go back and listen. You can always go back and listen to any of our interviews. And I'm going to take a short break, and I'll be right back.
Baby, I got so much love to give, and I want to give it all to you. Close the door, no need to worry no more. Let's bring this day to a pleasant end. Girl, it's me and you now. I've waited all day long just to hold you in my arms. And just exactly like I thought it would be, me loving you and you loving me. Let me rub your back where you say it's sore. Come on, get closer and closer, so close to me. Let's get lost in each other.
Are back. This is Black Writer Space. I am your host, Tiffany, a.k.a. Miss Mocha. Our guest tonight was Omar Tyree. I think I took about 3 pages of notes. He has so much information coming from a totally different perspective, talking about his career as a writer, publisher, speaker, screenwriter, songwriter. I mean, you name it, he's done it. I think he's kind of an all around, like when Zane came on, she doesn't just write books, she writes for different TV shows and just really just taking his craft to the next level. He took it and did what he was supposed to do with it. So we definitely commend him for that, and just giving some advice to the other side of the publishing game as far as what the publishers, major publishing companies are looking for, what they, what it's really about numbers is basically what he said, you know. And if you can't furnish those numbers, if that book is not going to sell, if they're not guaranteed that book is not going to sell, they are not going to pick you up. So now they're more so into getting the people with the reality shows and celebrity authors, not celebrity writers, because most celebrities that put out books don't write. So it's basically all about the numbers and whether you can sell or not. Since self-publishing has came into the game and it's pretty much increasing, it's decreasing the people that they're publishing with the main companies. So, and then people are losing their jobs because if the client doesn't pump the numbers that they need, so, you know, it's, wow. So, and that's what his new book is about, Corrupted. New people coming into the game and how a lot of the black editors are losing their jobs if they cannot back up the client that they just signed on to sell these books, to back up that $100,000 check or whatever the check was that they've already advanced. That book has to sell. So it's really something to think about. We talked about e-books versus hardcover or paperback. It's just two different formats, pretty much. So whichever one works for you. I've heard so many different testimonies about people making millions on e-books. So it just depends. Everybody doesn't have a computer, but maybe like 85%. Everybody has one of those gadgets, an iPhone, cell phone, Kindle. Even if I don't have a Kindle, but they have the Kindle app where you can download it straight to your laptop. So, yeah, it's definitely something to think about. Like I said, if you missed the show, feel free to go back and listen. Really, really, really great information. It really makes you sit back and think. When you hear from a author who is at his level and has done so much and has so much experience and can probably look at a sample of a manuscript and advise you on which route to go, I mean, why not take that advice? They've already been out there. They've done it, you know. So even with myself, I still haven't published my book, but I'm definitely taking the advice of the educated authors and writers and their wisdom and their advice. It means a lot, and it can definitely take you a long way. So definitely, if you get a chance, go back and listen to the show. If you're thinking about putting out a book, if you already in the process, I'm working on mine now, doing my little own personal editing before I finish. I'm trying to do at least 20,000 words for the first book, so which is not hard to do. It's not just about writing it down. You got to have a concept. You got to know what audience you're marketing to. You got to know about your writing style, your voice. I mean, he named everything. I was like, wow. So just every time I hear that from an established author with so much wisdom, it's like, wow. It just makes you sit back and think, rethink your whole plan. So we definitely want to keep you guys informed and excited about your writing projects, whatever you have going on. If you know somebody who's writing a book, don't ever just, you know, if it's your passion and it's something that you want to do, don't ever just get discouraged to the point where you just, oh, you know what, forget it, I ain't going to do that. And he also mentioned that also, everything shouldn't be so easy. You know, some things you should have to read. Sometimes you should have to think about some things. It shouldn't be just a piece of cake. So with that being said, don't be discouraged when it comes to completing your manuscript, you know, getting that first part of it out. Myself, mine is not going to be in one book, but I want the first one to be successfully completed, you know, and not just to say I put it out, but I want it to be with some sort of juice. I want it to have some kind of strength to it. So don't be discouraged. Stay encouraged, if anything. Feel free to go back and listen to a couple of our interviews. We had Zane on, we had Nikki Turner, and they all from their own experience speak about what they learned. So it's just something to take and just carry along with you through your journey of writing. I would never say it's hard or it's difficult, but everything is not going to be easy, especially something that you want to be successful. Not to say that it's hard, but it causes you to think. So with that being said, continue to watch our posts on Facebook and Twitter. I do have my site. I'm advertising. I'll be making some changes on that. Blackwriterspace.ning.com, and it's Blackwriterspace with two S's. So continue to watch that. I've been posting the links on Facebook and Twitter to let people know to make sure that they join. Go on and make your free profile while it's free, because it won't be free for long. I'll be charging a membership fee pretty soon. We have, I think, 343 members, I think, now. So it'll probably be free of charge to join for the next week or so. After that, probably beginning in March, it will be a membership fee. Feel free to email us with any ideas you have at blackwriterspace@gmail.com. I'm offering marketing packages to have your information posted on our blog. So we have weekly packages. We have packages to come on with an interview, which is for a very, 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 very minimal fee. You know, it does cost. Once you get your book out there, it costs to advertise your book. It costs for exposure. Even when you put your book on Amazon, they're not going to sell your book for free. They do get a percentage. So just some things to think about. Once you have your product out there, now what are you going to do with it? So, and it's not going to sell itself, because even with purchasing a domain and a website, you still have to get on and have some sort of marketing going on or some sort of something, and it's not all going to happen on Facebook. So I know it's hundreds of groups and like pages, and that's fine, but if you're really serious about marketing your book, you got to get out there and do some footwork. You got to get out there and do some book signings. And if you have the time, you can be your own PR and publicist. There's plenty of different marketing websites and PR websites online that you can look and study and do the stuff yourself. But if you don't, you can always pay somebody like me to post for you and Twitter. Set up your Twitter account, set up your Facebook account. These things are what we need in today's society. We have everything, a lot of stuff is online now. So, and as well as footwork. You got a lot of authors, they still carrying their books in the trunk. I know one of my authors, Darren Lowry, he don't leave home without some books. Every time I see him, oh, yeah, I got some books downstairs. You know, so it's not really about just sitting back, and it's not going to come knock on the door. It's really not. And like one of our callers said earlier, even authors like Omar Tyree, they had to start somewhere. So you have to start somewhere, and it's just a matter of how far you want to take it. So with that being said, stay encouraged, and we are definitely here to support you. If you have any questions, feel free to email us, hit us on Facebook, hit us on Twitter, and we are going to conclude tonight's show. I'm not sure if I'm having a show tomorrow. I don't have a guest. So, but I know we will be back Friday. I have a guest, Brian L. King. He's an urban literature author. He is on Twitter and Facebook as well. So we'll be chatting with him on February 17th, which is Friday at 7 p.m. And thank you so much for listening. I do want to say I appreciate our listeners for even taking the time to listen to us. And we have a couple of regulars out there, even those of you who just tuned in. Like tonight, we had a listener, and she's like, I just purchased Omar Tyree has packages on his website pertaining to publishing and consulting. So he has the one package, it's the master's degree, and that's the name of it, and it's like $249. Regularly priced $4.95. She's like, I just purchased that just from listening to the show. So I was like, wow, I was excited about that because people need help. And what better place to get it from than an established author like Omar Tyree? I mean, come on. You know, so we may not always agree with what our elders have to say, but they've been there. They've done it. It's just like how our kids look at us. You know, they don't want to listen to us. They think they know it all. So but I was really excited about that. She said she had just purchased it online, just listening to the show. So that's our whole purpose here, is to help people get to where they're trying to get to accomplish their goals as a writer and to be the best writer and efficient writer that you can be. So, again, we're here to support. And feel free to reach out to us at any time. We're going to conclude tonight's show, and we will be back Friday. Take care, and God bless.